She's the biggest name of our generation, a name synonymous with talent, power, and, well, headlines. Taylor Swift is celebrity. So let's walk through everything that's happened since we last covered her life. Welcome to Scandal from Shameless Podcast, the stories of the biggest celebrity controversies revisited. Now
you know I'm back. Hello.
Hi.
Not many stories or celebrities get five parts of a Scandal series, but Taylor Swift does.
Taylor Swift does. We've already done three parts on the life and times of Taylor Swift, of one Taylor Swift. It dropped about 2 years ago, just over. And we thought, look, she has had the biggest year of her entire career, arguably of her life. She is about to land in Australia this week for the biggest tour the world has ever seen. And that's not just my opinion. The facts and the stats will show that. So we thought, what better time to go back to the archives, re-push out the three parts that we've already done and give you two more.
Give you two more. Because as you said, Zara, 2023 was huge for Taylor Swift. There is so much for us to cover. Also, even back to 2022, literally where we stopped the last Scandal series, the scandals, the headlines, the stories just kept coming. So we're literally going to pick up where we left off. The Taylor Swift series that we put out 2 years ago is our most listened to thing of all time. Our three existing episodes have been listened to almost 700,000 times. So if anyone or anything warrants this, it is Taylor, as we said. Eilish, our Scandal pop culture journalist, also had a great point when it came to Taylor while she was researching this.
She did, and I wanted to read it out because Eilish is our pop culture journalist. She's also our in-house music expert because she's a musician herself. So I thought her take on Taylor after she put this together was really fascinating. So I wanted to read it out. This is not just a story about Taylor, but a story about Swifties. Taylor is so often conceding to her fans, acting in ways to appease them and constantly concerned with their perception of her and, in my opinion, their approval of her. To me, it feels like a constant push and pull. As much as this is a story about Taylor, it's a story about the sweeping, all-encompassing, hugely powerful wave that is her fandom and how it's truly a 100% symbiotic relationship and arguably the most important relationship in Taylor's life. I found myself referencing the Swifties as much as I found myself referencing Taylor herself throughout this script. I thought that's so bang on. It is this like deeply symbiotic relationship that is so push and pull. It's fruitful. It can be toxic.
Yeah, I think that's bang on. I think it serves Taylor in so many ways, but I think it also works against her in others.
And I think we're about to get into that. Full disclosure as well, this was only ever meant to be one part.
There's too much to cover.
But there was, once we started putting this together, Eilish was like, there's too much. We'll be recording for 3 hours if it's one episode.
I would happily record for 3 hours.
Well, we are. We're just going to split them into and put it out in two different parts. Let's dive straight back into where we left off, shall we?
Let's do it. All right, Zara. So where we left off was 2022. On August 28 that year, Taylor Swift made a surprise appearance at the MTV Video Music Awards. She was nominated for 5 awards that night, including Video of the Year for her short film All Too Well 10-minute version.
Yeah, now no one had especially expected her to show up to the 2022 VMAs in the first place, but the surprises didn't end there. I mean, I think we knew once we saw her that A, she had been told she was going to win because Taylor Swift would not really turn up to an award show like that without knowing she was going to win. But also she was going to use it as a launching platform to announce her latest album. During her acceptance speech for Video of the Year, she spoke directly to her fans when she said, "I wouldn't be able to re-record my albums if it weren't for you. You emboldened me to do that. And I had made up my mind that if you were going to be this generous and give us this award, I thought it might be a fun moment to tell you that my brand new album comes out October 21 and I will tell you more at midnight."
Do you remember what she wore for this?
Yeah, it was like a midnight dress.
Yeah, this was when the photographs of this night, I remember it so clearly, to the actual VMAs, she wore this. It was almost like this dripping in diamonds look, like very silvery, sparkly, midnight-esque look with a red lip. And then to the after party, she wore a dress that looked like midnight, looked like a midnight sky with stars across it. As we know, Taylor Swift, so often her sartorial choices very neatly align or are Easter eggs for her content and her art. Sure enough, at midnight that night, Taylor shared her new 13-track record. It was titled Midnights. Obviously, this announcement sent fans into a total frenzy. It was her first brand new album in 2 years, despite being very active and being very present with her re-recording project of her existing work. This was her first injection of new material since Evermore.
Yeah, now Midnights was the top selling album of the year in the US one day after it came out. Upon release, it was labeled an instant classic by Rolling Stone. It's funny, it took me a long time to get my head around this album.
Do you remember when we listened to it together?
I do, I remember. And I was like, I don't like any of these songs.
We were in the Shameless Media office. We were doing a listening party together. Yeah. I was instantly like, I love this, I love this. And you were like, I don't love this.
But I also have said on the show before, I think I have something wrong with me where it's very, very, very rare that I'll listen to a song for the first time and love it or know what I like. It's like I need to hear things through osmosis for a while before I can kind of learn what I love. It's so odd because now some of my favorite Taylor Swift songs are on Midnights, like a couple of them.
What are your favorites?
I love Maroon.
Yep.
I do love Bejeweled.
Yeah,
I think because I love like the meaning of the song. I think it's kind of fun.
It's fun. It's a fun one to listen to.
Yeah.
How funny. You and I have quite different. Well, I mean, I love the whole album. To be honest, Midnights would be in my top two or three Taylor Swift albums, I think. But my favorite songs are Midnight Rain, Mastermind, and Snow on the Beach.
See, I can't love Snow on the Beach, and I can't love Mastermind.
Well, do you remember the first time Midnight Rain played? You were like, what is this? Yes. You had like a visceral, I do not like this.
100%. There's like, and I remember us having a conversation and realizing that you quite like a song with like a synthesizer underneath it.
I love it because I also love False God from Lover and it's similar.
And I don't. And I was like, I don't love a synthesizer.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's just sort of our really technical sort of musical analysis. Now, during release week, Taylor appeared on Jimmy Fallon and referred to Midnights as her first directly autobiographical album that she'd put out in a while. I have lots of thoughts on this that I think we're going to touch on throughout the episode. This lined up with what she'd said elsewhere as well. Like on social, she'd said that the album was inspired by five topics: self-hatred, revenge fantasies, wondering what might have been, falling in love, and falling apart. She also added that each song on the album was the stories of 13 sleepless nights scattered throughout my life.
Yeah. On Jimmy Fallon, she also said this.
I'm feeling very overwhelmed by the fans' love for the record. I'm also feeling like very soft and fragile.
So it's everything.
The two can exist at once. I'm 32, so we're considered geriatric pop stars.
No, I don't think so.
They start trying to put us out to pasture at age 25. Yeah. I'm just happy to be here. Yeah.
I mean, that's something that we've heard from Taylor Swift in various forms before, and every time she says it, even if the sentiment is the same, I just love it every single time. She also explored this theme of aging head on in Midnight's lead single, Anti-Hero, with this lyric. She sang, "Sometimes I feel like everybody is a sexy baby and I'm a monster on the hill, too big to hang out, slowly lurching towards your favorite city, pierced through the heart but never killed." This particular lyric caused a bit of a stir online. How did you feel about it when you first heard it? Did it make sense to you? Did you find it odd?
Cringe.
I remember when we were listening, we were like, did she just say sexy baby?
Yeah, it felt strange.
It felt like something I wasn't getting. I didn't understand it.
Yeah, 100%. Now, it caused so much confusion amongst her fans at several media outlets. Began like absolutely analysing this lyric. What did you think it was at the time? Because I couldn't really deep it. I felt too stupid.
I went over to Twitter to try and find what people were saying on there, and people were analysing it. I remember this making sense to me at the time, and it still makes a bit of sense now. That the sexy baby trope is kind of like the Ariana Grande kind of pop star, where we tend to sexualize women in the public eye who look a lot younger than what they are. And I mean, it's a tricky thing, right? Because Ariana Grande has been of age for a very long time, but does have the image of maybe a more childlike person or at least a teenager.
There were definitely a lot of fans of Taylor who thought she was referencing an episode of 30 Rock.
I remember this,
The phrase was used in that show as a punchline, but writer Sophia June from Nylon actually disagreed with this. She said, "To pin sexy baby as a 30 Rock reference is embarrassingly naive. The concept of a sexualized child, however uncomfortable, is a part of the bedrock of our culture around sex and desire, and it is utterly perplexing to me that people are confused." Sorry, Sophia,
sorry,
for being
Sophia.
Dill. Fuck.
I mean, I think she makes a great point, but I don't think it's utterly perplexing that anyone had questions around the phrase sexy baby.
Fuck, I'm an idiot.
We're so stupid.
I know.
Sexy babies aside, it was during this press run for Midnights that we also got a big tease from Taylor. When asked if she was going to go on tour, she said this.
You've done the albums, you've done the re-recordings, but also you haven't toured in like 4 years. We want you to.
I think I should do it.
I love the playfulness of this. Just be yeah. I should do it. I should do it. So maybe we'll do it.
Maybe we'll do it. I mean, it wouldn't be long before that tour, though, was announced on November 1, 2022, just a couple of weeks after Midnights was released. She announced the Eras tour. In an Instagram post, she revealed the first 27 dates of the US tour. She said she was enchanted to announce the shows and promised international dates as soon as she could. She ended the caption with, "It's been a long time coming," both an ode to her four-year gap between tours and also her song Miss Americana and the heartbreak Prince, which would end up being the Eras tour opening number. I hope my sister is not listening to this because she is coming to the concert with me on Friday, and she is one of the only people in the world who has found a way to not know what is happening in this tour.
Some of the questions she's texted to you have been so delightful because somehow she's just put her blinkers on and doesn't know anything about it.
I said to her over Christmas, I said, "What surprise songs do you want?" And I said something like, "I want, I don't know, New Romantics or something like a classic."
I want New Romantics, yeah.
And she goes, "Oh, so now I know it's not on the set list." And I was like, "Oh my God, I forget how little you know."
Didn't she say to you, "Do we think she'll play All Too Well?" Or
yeah,
something?
Yeah. Like, yes. "Do you think she'll play the 10-minute version of All Too Well?" And I was like, this beautiful, beautiful naivety.
We should have said that at the top of the episode. We are both going
on Friday.
The concert on Friday, going with our sisters.
Yeah.
So excited. Cannot wait. Anyway, back to the content. Obviously, demand for tour tickets for the Eras tour were always going to be extremely high, but I don't think anyone in the world, Taylor included, anticipated just how crazy things would get when tickets were on sale.
Yeah, now we need to go back. We spoke about this on Shameless at the time, but we need to go back and kind of outline what happened here because it was pretty wild. With the US tour, two separate pre-sales were set up in place to buy tickets. We first had this thing called the Ticketmaster Verified Fan Program, in which fans could kind of sign up via Ticketmaster to be sent a code to purchase tickets at their preferred concert. Now, being sent a code didn't guarantee that you were, of course, able to purchase a ticket, but it was meant to kind of stop scalping. Mm. I mean, the program had appeared to work in the past. According to a Ticketmaster executive called David Marcus, he said, "For big events, more than 30% of tickets might end up being resold. But with Harry Styles' 2017 tour, which used the verified fan program, we saw less than 5% of tickets being resold for the shows, and that's a huge improvement." So this was set up to kind of help the fans to avoid scalping, as I said. Mm. Now, I did say that there were two separate pre-sales. The second one was the Capital One pre-sale. Capital One is a credit card company in the US. Fans were required to own a Capital One credit card in order to access this pre-sale. So that was also run on the Ticketmaster site. I don't know, for Australian listeners listening to this, you might remember that we had an Amex pre-sale.
Yes.
We also had a normal pre-sale. But both of these pre-sale, the Capital One and the Verified Fan Program, were scheduled for November 15, 2022, with general sale scheduled for 3 days later.
So naturally, some people signed up for pre-sale. Other people may have been disorganized, may have missed the boat, whatever. Were just waiting for November 18 when they were planning to get their tickets. According to information later released by Ticketmaster, 3.5 million people registered for the pre-sale, which made it the biggest registration in the company's history. According to Ticketmaster, 1.5 million people received a code. A remaining 2 million people had to be put on a wait list. It became clear extremely quickly that just from pre-sale registrations, ticket supply would never meet demand, because before a single ticket went on sale, Taylor added 25 more shows just to the US leg of the Eras tour.
Yeah, now that brings the Eras tour first leg performance total to 52 shows. It was her biggest tour to date, and at this point, that was only the American shows.
Yeah, the amount of work, I know we'll get to this, but that amount of work is astronomical.
Well, we also didn't know how long the show was going to go for at this point as well. Now, we cannot stress enough how much of a mess this pre-sale was. I mean, The verified fan pre-sale was a disaster. On the day, Deadline ran a report that read, some fans compared it to the Hunger Games. Overwhelming demand caused what Ticketmaster characterized as intermittent issues with the site. Potential ticket buyers complained of waiting hours with little to show for it. Others said they were being automatically logged out without being allowed to complete their purchases.
Rolling Stone reported, as of 11 a.m. on Tuesday, the site was experiencing major issues with fans either completely logged out or in a queue of 2,000 plus people strong that appeared to be frozen. Swifties were naturally vocal on social media. I mean, when we were having little issues in the Shameless office with buying tickets, I also took to Twitter to voice my frustration. So I can't even imagine how many people did that with this US ticketing disaster. They were all saying just how difficult it was to get tickets, how difficult it was to use the site. And keep in mind, these people complaining were mostly the lucky ones who actually got a pre-sale code, not the 2 million people who were in a waiting line for a code.
Yeah, Ticketmaster posted like heaps of updates to their social media accounts throughout the day. Would have been a terrible day to be at the Ticketmaster office, blaming historically unprecedented demand. It is historic demand, but I wouldn't call it historically unprecedented when you have 3.5 million people sign up for a code.
That is so true.
Like, it's precedented. You knew this was going to happen. The conversation was so major that politicians got involved, became mammoth. As per People, House Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted that Ticketmaster has become a monopoly after its merger with Live Nation and that they needed to be reined in. Another guy called Dave Cicilline, who chaired the House of Reps antitrust panel, called on the Justice Department to investigate. He tweeted, Ticketmaster's excessive wait times and fees are completely unacceptable, as seen with today's Taylor Swift tickets. I learned so much in covering this story on Shameless at the time, how much of a monopoly the ticketing systems are in this world, like even in Australia, and that artists have so very little power when it comes to selling tickets for their own concerts.
I missed the episode we did on this because I was on my honeymoon, and I remember getting back from I was kind of off the grid, and then I came back and heard all about this, and it was just huge. I mean, for anyone who chairs the House of Representatives antitrust panel to get involved with this and to be calling in the Justice Department, I think shows you just how huge it is. Here's the wild part. 2 days later, on November 17, 2022, Ticketmaster cancelled the general sale of tickets to the Eras Tour, which was set to open the following day, because they ran out of tickets to sell.
I can't get my head around this.
Now that we've got tickets and that we've gone through all of this in Australia, albeit a lot more organised than...
And it still felt like a nightmare.
And it still felt like a nightmare. Can you imagine the outcry here, or like, to be honest, the devastation? If you're a major Taylor fan, you've waited for this tour for 4 years... And then you're told, actually, the day we promised you that you'll be able to try to buy tickets, that's been ripped out from underneath you. That's not happening.
Because we accidentally sold all the tickets.
How do you accidentally allocate 100% of the tickets to pre-sale? How does that happen?
I don't know if I felt like Adele or if there are people listening to this who are similar to me, but this was the first time that I realized that general sale often didn't carry the majority of tickets. Like, I've never been someone to sign up to a pre-sale. I'll always look at the general sale and be like, that's when I'll buy my tickets, because I'm not like super organized to, and I don't want to try and get tickets on two different days for one concert.
Yep.
But this was the first time where I was like, oh, general sale is not like 90% of the tickets.
No, and to be clear, we tried to come up with numbers and like breakdowns as to what the standard is. There isn't really a standard. I always presumed pre-sale would be 20% of tickets, on sale would be 80%.
No.
There's no real rule and there's no transparency as to what's going where.
And I think that's a real problem, a huge problem.
Yeah.
And you can kind of understand why there has been so much outcry about the monopoly with these companies in the wake of the Eras Tour. Now, fans were devastated and angry, and people were wondering where Taylor Swift was and what she was going to say about this. On November 18, on the day the general sale was meant to happen, she posted a statement to the situation on her Instagram story. She said, well, it goes without saying that I am extremely protective of my fans. We've been doing this for decades together, and over the years, I have brought so many elements of my career in-house. I've done this specifically to improve the quality of my fans' experience by doing it myself with my team, who care as much about my fans as I do. It is really difficult for me to trust an outside entity with these relationships and loyalties, and it's excruciating for me to just watch mistakes happen with no recourse.
Ooh, she explained that her team would be investigating what went wrong and added, I am not going going to make excuses for anyone because we asked them multiple times if they could handle this kind of demand, and we were assured they could. It's truly amazing that 2.4 million people got tickets, but it really pisses me off that a lot of them felt like they had to go through several bear attacks to get them. All I can say is that my hope is to provide more opportunities for us to all get together and sing these songs. Thank you for wanting to be there. You have no idea how much that means. The same day, Ticketmaster released a lengthy statement themselves. In it, they openly apologised both to Taylor Swift and her fans, I quote, especially those who had a terrible experience trying to purchase tickets. They also tried to explain themselves. Ticketmaster blamed a, and I quote again, a staggering number of bot attacks and fans who didn't have pre-sale codes visiting the site for driving their site traffic up 4 times their previous company's peak. Ticketmaster said they did slow down sales to stabilize the systems, which was the reason for the extra long queues as well. As per their statement, even when a high demand on sale goes flawlessly from a tech perspective, many fans are left empty-handed. For example, based on the volume of traffic to our site, Taylor would need to perform over 900 stadium shows, almost 20 times the number of shows she's doing. That's a stadium show every single night for the next 2.5 years. While it's impossible for everyone to get tickets to these shows, we know we can do more to improve the experience, and that's what we're focused on. Frustrating that they didn't explain the, oopsie, we sold all the tickets when we weren't supposed to bit.
Completely. I think there is something to be said about what that demand looks like in reality, mm-hmm. not excusing Ticketmaster at all, but 900 stadium shows just in the US, a show for 3 years. It's so crazy. Like a stadium show. It's crazy. It's just
imagine
in one country.
Imagine being that famous. Imagine having a life where that many people are infatuated with you.
I also think this was well over a year ago. I think if this was now as well, it would be even bigger. Mm. That same day, the New York Times reported that the US Justice Department was going to be looking into whether or not Live Nation, which is Ticketmaster's parent company, abused its power in the music industry in regards to the situation. And over the following weeks, the United States Congress announced an investigation into the fiasco to ensure that Ticketmaster didn't have an unfair monopoly on the live event ticketing market. Now, to be clear, reports suggest that this investigation predated the Taylor ticket fiasco, but it's widely accepted that this was the controversy that put the investigation on the map. I think it made it mainstream. I mean, I don't think I've ever cared in the past about Ticketmaster's monopoly over live event ticketing.
Could not have given a fuck before
until
the Taylor Swift
this,
thing.
And sort of it massively ramped up the public's investment in the investigation and its findings.
Yeah, for sure. As of the time of recording, the case is still ongoing, although several US states have passed new laws to attempt to prevent that kind of thing from ever happening again. That was the controversies before the Eras Tour began. Zara, after the break, we are going to talk about what the hell happened when the Eras Tour started, because oh my god, from March 2023 onwards, Taylor Swift's life was beyond controversial, beyond fascinating, beyond impressive.
Alrighty, Mish. So let's talk about the opening night of the Eras Tour. It took place in Glendale, Arizona on March
17, 2023. My birthday.
To pretty much universal critical acclaim. Great day of the year. Rolling Stone called it a 3-hour career-spanning victory lap. What a sentence. The Atlantic called it unbelievable. And largely, Taylor was praised for the volume and sheer length of the show. Like, she committed to doing a big show.
Yeah.
It comes in at 3 hours and 15 minutes. The production quality of the entire performance was widely praised. People likened it to like a Broadway musical instead of a pop show. It was crazy.
I'm so excited to watch it. The only real criticism she received, if you can even call it that, was the lack of songs from her first album and from Speak Now. That was pretty minor, though. And apart from that,
who cares? Sorry.
Genuinely, who cares? Those aren't two albums that I'm desperate for anyway. Everyone was really, really impressed. For the record, for those who haven't looked at the set list recently, it has 6 songs from Lover, 3 from Fearless, 5 from Evermore, 4 from Reputation, 2 from Speak Now, 4 from Red, 7 from Folklore, 5 from 1989, and 8 from Midnights. I mean, it could tell you that maybe Midnight's is her favourite, but then also a bit of recency bias, perhaps.
Yeah, and also that idea that if not for the pandemic, this just would have been the Midnight's tour.
Yeah.
So she kind of had to lean in quite a lot to an album that still, I think, needed to find its feet a little bit. I mean, it was obviously being sold very well, but it still needed that marketing push.
That affirmation
that Taylor. A tour provides. Now, as per Rolling Stone, the sheer length of the set is a feat but not completely surprising considering the breadth of catalogue at Swift's disposal. Watching the 12-time Grammy winner take the stage right at 8 p.m. and continue past 11 p.m. triggers the often overused cliche, who is doing it like her?
Taylor also hinted at the Ticketmaster fiasco herself on opening night. She told the crowd this, "I'm going to take a wild guess and say that if you're here tonight, that's a pretty good chance that you went to a considerable amount of effort to be with us. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for wanting to be with us on night one." It's so important, I think, as well, to say that the stakes were so astronomically high after the ticketing controversy that the fact that she still smashed it out of the park was even more important. Like, everyone was looking at this because of the scale of the scandal when tickets went on sale. Everyone was watching this. And she still impressed us all.
Yeah, I think it's what's really fascinating to me about Taylor Swift is the bar is always very high and she's always very committed to exceeding that bar.
She sails over it, yeah.
And I think it reminds me a lot of the quotes that she said in the last couple of years where she's spoken about, you know, when things have been quite controversial in her personal life and she might be getting dragged in the press, she knows the one thing that she can back herself on doing is committing to her art. But I think what you can extend that to is her work ethic. I think at the end of the day, she can back herself to put her head down and do something well because she'll just work harder than anybody else.
Yeah.
I don't see anybody else wanting to perform for 3.5 hours for years. She will do this for years.
Yeah.
That's my idea of a nightmare. I simply do not have that work ethic.
The ingredients that went into creating Taylor Swift were incredibly special and like one in a generation kind of stuff. Keep in mind, every story we're about to tell you about is happening while she's going through that grueling schedule. So I think that just ramps everything up more. She's working harder than she ever has in her life, and she's about to go through the biggest headlines perhaps too.
Well, yeah, and she's doing all of it performing publicly, as you say. It's not just the workload, it's everything so public as
everything
well.
Everything everywhere all at once.
Yeah. So the first and arguably the biggest story from Taylor's 2023 landed on April 8 when Entertainment Tonight ran a story with the headline, "Taylor Swift and Joe Alwyn break up after 6 years of dating." The story read, "Taylor Swift and Joe Alwyn have called it quits. ET has exclusively learned that the Lavender Haze singer and the British actor broke up a few weeks ago. ET has also learned that the split was amicable and it was not dramatic. We're told the relationship had just run its course. It's why Alwyn hasn't been spotted at any shows. Swift is currently on her The Eras tour, which heads to Tampa, Florida next week."
Many Swifties were in complete disbelief about this story. I remember when we shared it on the Shameless Podcast Instagram account and people were grumpy that they were even sharing it.
Genuinely, people were like, "This is not confirmed. Taylor hasn't said anything."
People literally were like to us, "Why are you sharing fake news?"
Or like, it's tabloid reporting. And I was like, oh goodness, people do not want to believe this. But when a story is framed in the way that it was.
Exclusive, the emphatic nature of it.
Coming straight from Tree Pain herself. As per Vox, those who do believe the news, however, are mourning it in their own way, such as jokingly attempting to tear down the sign for Cornelia Street in New York or tweeting at the Pope and Joe Biden to do something.
This piece does a really great job of explaining the kind of heroic, godlike character Joe had always been in Taylor Swift's music. The piece reads, "Swift has painted a portrait of her relationship with Joe Alwyn that portrays them as almost cosmically aligned, a deeper kind of soulmates than the wide-eyed fairy tale romances she sang about in 2010's Speak Now or the fiery love-hate passion of 2012's Red. I once believed that love would be burning red, but it's golden," she sings about Alwyn on the Lover track Daylight. Speaking of Taylor's songs, with the new information we had about the state of her relationship with Joe and this breakup, Many fans began looking back at Midnights through a different lens.
Yeah, people were like, is Midnights actually a breakup album? As per BuzzFeed, when Midnights was released in October, many listeners attributed the heartbreak songs to her past romances on the assumption she and Joe were still happily in love. However, the new context of their split has put many of the songs in a whole new light, especially when coupled with the source quotes about why their relationship didn't work. I mean, on the surface, many of the songs on Midnights did give the impression that her relationship with Joe was a happy one. We had Sweet Nothing and Paris, for example, but there are other songs, and I think it's hard for me because I think the timing of this album, I think we know from her own admissions and stuff from Jack Antonoff that it was written end of 2021, this album. And so it feels like hard to consider this whole thing a breakup album about Joe Alwyn.
Yeah.
That said, you can't not listen to Bejeweled and think that that song perfectly encapsulates the life that she wanted to live post-Joe.
Yeah, fair. Here are some of the lyrics from Bejeweled, which is essentially about feeling frustrated or confined within a romantic relationship. Taylor sings, "Baby boy, I think I've been too good of a girl. Did all the extra credit, then got graded on a curve. I think it's time to teach some lessons. I made you my world, have you heard? I can reclaim the land, and I miss you, but I miss sparkling." As per People, sources claimed that while their relationship had begun in quite an insulated, blankety almost
very
way.
Very private.
Yeah, because it was while Taylor was retreating from the spotlight post Kim Kardashian, Kanye West, famous Snake Gate, Taylor Swift is cancelled party, that whole thing. That's when they got together. And according to some reports, over the course of their 6 years together, and as Taylor really leaned heavily back into the pop star thing, Joe was struggling with that change, maybe, that she had gone from being very quiet and wanting that home life to maybe wanting to lean back out again. And that was a cause of tension.
It just feels true. It feels like a true story to me.
I agree.
Because if there's one thing we've learned of Taylor Swift in the last year, it's that she loves being famous.
She loves being a celebrity. She loves all of it.
She loves it. She struggled with it when it wasn't working in her favor. Naturally, that would ruin your mental health. But when it is working in your favor, I don't think there's anyone who loves it more than Taylor Swift. And Joe Alwyn is a deeply private celebrity. You know nothing about him.
Oh, he wouldn't even show his face in the Taylor Swift documentary. He had like a baseball cap on. Miss Americana. You didn't even see him.
Exactly. So it's like this story feels very accurate from the outside. And with that in mind, the song feels like quite reflective of that. But it's whether or not that song is written about someone before Joe as well. This is a dynamic that she's encountered before.
And this is the thing, right? I think we're about to talk about some other songs on the album. Every time this conversation comes up, for me, I really think back to what Taylor has said herself, that these are about midnights scattered throughout her life. So for me, when I hear a breakup song, I don't go, oh, this is chronological about her life in the last 3 or 4 years. I go, oh, this could be a relationship she had when she was 16, 21, 24, whatever. That said, Midnight Rain was another song that fans speculated was written about Joe. Others believe the song was written about Tom Hiddleston. But this lyric in particular, I think, had a lot of people talking. He wanted a bride. I was making my own name, chasing that fame. He stayed the same. All of me changed like midnight rain.
Yeah, and then there was Lavender Haze. Here's how Taylor described the song at the time of release.
I think a lot of people have to deal with this now, not just like quote-unquote public figures, because we live in the era of social media, and if the world finds out that you're in love with somebody, they're gonna weigh in on it. Like my relationship for 6 years, we've had to dodge weird rumors, tabloid stuff, and we just ignore it. And so this song is sort of about the act of ignoring that stuff to protect the real stuff.
So that to me counters anything we've just said. This was said, Taylor released this video right around when Lavender Haze came out, of course, the album came out. You're not saying this if your relationship is not intact at the time of recording. She is saying, this is someone I love, someone who a relationship I want to protect, a relationship we want to keep out of the tabloids, which tells me Midnight Rain, Bejeweled, you name it, is all written about previous relationships and not about Joe Alwyn.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is I think the biggest downfall here is her referring to the album, as I quoted earlier in the episode, as directly autobiographical. Because I think when you do that, people are naturally going to have that recency bias to say, okay, yeah. Well, if you've just gone through a breakup and you're telling me that these songs are about your life, well, then I'm obviously going to speculate it's about the boyfriend I know yeah. the most. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's going to happen. And if she didn't want that to happen, once again, she'd have to say these songs are fiction, like Betty, you know? Yeah. Like, that's what you've got to do.
Storytelling.
Yeah. Now, as we said above, Taylor being on tour during this news cycle meant that we got some hints as to how she was feeling about everything in real time during her performances. The first of these hints occurred on April 9, literally the day after the split was first reported, when People reported that Taylor had removed the song Invisible String from the Eras Tour set list and replaced it with The One.
Now, for non-Swifties, if you're listening, Invisible String is famously a song about love, about the cosmic inevitability of Taylor and presumably Joe.
It's beautiful.
It's gorgeous. It's all about how we were always destined to be together.
Invisible String.
And it was about Joe. I think we could just emphatically say it's about Joe. While The One, even though that sounds like it's about a soulmate, is actually a song about a relationship that could have been great, but was never it, was never The One.
I'm intrigued as to why she swapped these out.
I think it'd be hard to sing. If that's the most intimate song you've written about your ex and you're going through a breakup, imagine how hard that would be.
But she'd already been doing it.
I reckon the timeline between them breaking up and us finding out was days. Maybe.
No, I think it was pre-tour.
I think rocky pre-tour, but they broke up.
But it still would have been hard to sing, I think. I think it's like, also, you're a performer. You sing love songs about people you're not with anymore all the time. To swap them out is to send a message. And I mean, we know if there's one thing about Taylor Swift, she loves to send a message.
Yeah.
But it's awkward. Like, I think it's more awkward to swap the songs than it is to just sing them.
Yeah.
Now, on April 17, Elle reported on an interaction that Taylor had with a fan during a performance in Florida. Now, they said another fan in the audience raised a sign that said, "You okay?" while Swift was performing Delicate. The track, of course, is one of Swift's many about Alwyn and their romance. See, that is, I would actually say, maybe her most intimate song about him.
I love that song.
Sorry, this is like not the quote. This is like my commentary.
That song.
Elle reported, Swift raised her thumb up and the fan lowered the sign.
Us Weekly reported another hint a few days later on April 22, noting that during Look What You Made Me Do, Taylor made a loser thumb and forefinger sign at the dance of representing her album Lover, which was largely about Joe Alwyn. That's a little bit more tenuous for me, I will say. However, I think we can say that Taylor was trying to tell us something in various ways across various shows. In the thick of Swifties dealing with the Joe Alwyn breakup, she did something surprising again, Zara. 3.5 weeks later, after we learned she had left her boyfriend or broken up with her boyfriend of 6 years, it was revealed that she was dating one of the most divisive musicians in the world.
So speaking of reports that came out that I didn't believe, this one. But because of where it came from, on May 3, 2023, the British tabloid The Sun ran an exclusive story with the headline, Taylor's New Love, Taylor Swift and New Romance with Brit Rock Star Matty Healy Weeks After She Split From Boyfriend. The Sun is a notoriously untrustworthy publication.
Shit-stirring publication.
Very much so. Yeah. It was such an odd one to hear this news from. The anonymous source quoted throughout the story told the publication, she and Maddie are madly in love. It's super early days, but it feels right. They first dated very briefly almost 10 years ago, but timing just didn't work out. Taylor and Joe actually split up back in Feb, so there was absolutely no crossover. Both Maddie and Taylor have been touring over the past few weeks, so there's been a lot of FaceTiming and texting, but she can't wait to see him again. Now, the source noted that Taylor was reportedly excited to have Maddie fly over to Nashville to catch her at the Eras Tour, which was set to continue just a few days after the story went live.
This is such a fever dream looking back.
I remember this so well because I remember you and I were like, there's no way. There is no way. No one took this seriously.
Well, there was a way.
There was a way. But before we got to the way that it was, we need to talk about Matty Healy and who he was at this point.
Oh my God. So who is Matty Healy? Well, he's the frontman of the British band The 1975. And in what might come as a surprise to some Swifties, as we said earlier, he and Taylor have actually been in similar circles for quite some time. They first met way back in November 2014 when she attended the 1975's concert in LA. She even posted about the show to her Instagram at the time and quoted lyrics from their song The City in her caption. From then on, they crossed paths occasionally over the years. Maddie wore a 1989 T on stage around that time, and Taylor reblogged a photo of this on her Tumblr, captioning it, what she called the 1975 her favorite band. She was also papped shortly after wearing their T-shirt. So, I mean, all of that together, we can assume that November 2014, they were either sleeping together or dating, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, something. From this point onwards, the rumors around them dating were pretty persistent. Maddie told several media outlets that they weren't dating. He said to Australia's Today FM.
I love it when Australia just pops
Same. Up. We speak occasionally, but there's no relationship or anything happening. It really didn't happen. It would be amazing for me if it did. I mean, at that point as well, Taylor started dating Calvin Harris, who we actually told you in earlier episodes that she dated for about a year. So once she started dating Calvin, the rumors obviously died down.
Something you need to know about Matty Healy is that he is, for lack of a better word, a show-off. He considers himself quite edgy. He also seems to consider himself to be rather intelligent. He'll often do or say things just to get a reaction, and it's difficult to determine whether or not he's joking. I think Matty Healy loves a bit, and he also loves confusing people as to what is real life and what is performance art.
Yeah, I don't really get it.
I don't love it.
No,
it's not my cup of tea.
It is also maybe fair to make clear here as well that Matty has struggled with addiction issues in the past. His band held an intervention for him in 2017 when they were concerned about his heroin use, and he attended rehab that same year. In 2016, though, he made headlines again after he told Q magazine that dating Taylor Swift would have been emasculating. In the same article, he appeared to confirm that his connection with Taylor had actually been romantic in a sense. Oh, so confusing. He said, "The one time I did have a flirtation with a girl, it ends up going everywhere. I mean, I got on E! News and people were like, who's Matty Healy? So that was cool. But I didn't make a big deal out of it myself. It's not really anything to talk about because if she wasn't Taylor Swift, we wouldn't be talking about her. She wasn't a big impact on my life. It's just interesting to me how interested the world is about Taylor Swift. If I've gone out with Taylor Swift, I would have been, fucking hell, I am not Taylor Swift's boyfriend. You know, fuck that. That's also a man thing, a demasculating, emasculating thing."
Right. So no one is quite clear on whether he's criticizing toxic masculinity or if he is embodying toxic masculinity. We don't know. We do know that he copped some backlash for this at the time, and he took to Twitter to clarify where he stood. He wrote, "Now I may admit to being an idiot on occasion, but I am not a misogynist. I was being honest," in capital letters, "about how it feels to be constantly associated with the most famous woman on the planet." He clarified that while he didn't date Taylor, he really admired her, writing, "I found her to be one of the most gracious, hardworking, creatively gifted, and beautiful women that I've ever had the pleasure to meet. I personally have a lot of respect and admiration for her. Why would I not?"
Yes, in 2021, Maddie and the rest of the 1975 worked with Jack Antonoff on their second new record, Being Funny in a Foreign Language, which brought him further into the Taylor Swift universe. By the end of 2022, he actually revealed that he and Taylor had worked on a song for Midnights together, but for whatever reason, it didn't end up making the final cut. Now, when asked why, he told two radio hosts, "It was for reasons not to be criticized."
So fast forward to January 2023, Jan 12, in fact. Taylor actually made a surprise appearance at the 1975's concert in London. She played Anti-Hero live for the first time ever, and she also played a cover of their song, the one that she loves and we referenced earlier, The City. Mind you, this was well before the Joe Alwyn breakup news broke. Back to the controversies, though, back to the timeline. We're now in Feb 2023, because that's when Matty appeared on an episode of the podcast The Adam Friedland Show. This was not his best interview, Zara McDonald.
Oh, it wasn't his best interview at all. Now, as per Vulture, in the episode, Healy is part of a racist discussion about the rapper Ice Spice. After Healy mentions an attempt to DM Ice Spice, the hosts attempt to guess her heritage and mock the accents of different ethnic groups. Healy laughs at the hosts' accents on the podcast and encourages them. At another point in the podcast, Friedland mentions a friend walking in on Healy watching ghetto gaggers porn, which has been criticized as racist and misogynist after a party. Healy confirms and expands upon the story, saying it was a video of somebody just getting like brutalized. It was pretty awful quotes, and they were pretty awful exchanges. The episode was removed shortly after it went live, and Maddie issued an apology of sorts while he was on stage Mish during a 1975 concert.
Yeah, that apology of sorts went as follows. I feel kind of a bit sorry.
Sorry, but you can't start an apology.
I feel kind of a bit sorry. Ice Spice, I'm sorry. It's not because I'm annoyed that me joking got misconstrued. It's because I don't want Ice Spice to think I'm a dick. I am genuinely sorry if I upset her because I fucking love her.
Yeah, now, which brings us back to May 2023, when those headlines came out about Taylor and Maddie and the Swifties lost their tiny minds. People couldn't believe it, as I said. I didn't believe it. The same day this report surfaced, though, Maddie Healy was seen mouthing the words, "This song is about you. You know who you are. I love you," before performing the song "About You" during a 1975 show.
In case you guys aren't aware, "About You" is a song about a long-lost love that includes the lyric, "We get married in our heads, something to do while we try to recall how we met. Do you think I have forgotten about you?" Sure enough, on May 5, Maddie Healy was photographed at the Eras Tour show in Nashville. The Pop Crave tweet announcing his presence at the show was liked more than 46,000 times. This was one of those wild moments in 2023 pop culture news. Like, we couldn't believe it. Even now, I don't believe it, and I know exactly how it all ended up. It was just wild that the Sun's report with zero evidence ended up being bang on.
Yeah, because somebody had leaked to them. And I was like, who goes straight to the Sun?
It's Maddie being mouthy and telling someone and them going to the Sun.
No, there's it's Taylor's team. Reckon? Totally.
To the Sun?
Yeah.
I would believe it's Taylor's team if it went to anyone other than the Daily Mail or the Sun.
No, I think there was something different about they wanted to. The chaos of this story didn't make sense, but there's no way she wasn't on board with people finding out about this. I it was the first time as well I really properly fell in love with Pop Crave because they were breaking me news left, right and center. Now, this wasn't all, right? That same night during the Eras Tour stop in Nashville, the first one, Taylor herself mouthed the word. "This song is about you, you know who you are, I love you," before singing Cardigan. Sorry, this was so weird.
Do you find it, okay, let's decide. Is it fun chaos or cringe chaos?
Cringe chaos. Because of the contents of the sentence, I think if they decided to mouth something similar that wasn't so earnest, and it would be like fun chaos, but this is like what?
Yeah, I think I'm going to opt for fun chaos.
Like devil's advocate.
I think at the time I found this cringe, the more time that passes, I look back at this kind of stuff from Taylor's career and I'm like, you know what? She's giving us something to talk about, and I could talk about this forever.
I wanted to talk about this forever. It's so weird. I ever wanted to do was talk about this. Oh. I remember it so well. So Maddie and Taylor were obviously dating, and the Swifties didn't feel good about it at all. A couple of fans were into it. One supportive tweet went viral on Swiftie Twitter. In it, the user included a photo of Maddie and Taylor being papped together alongside a photo of Joe and Taylor being papped together. The accompanying tweet now lives in folklore, pardon the pun, where the user said, "Do you see the difference? I love how Maddie walked several steps behind Taylor while still protecting her. Maddie doesn't put Taylor in the basement. He is not afraid of her shine. He lets her be jeweled." Do you see this tweet come up all the time now in different contexts?
Yeah, I do. And the fact that it became a meme, I mean, it's so unsurprising, but it also spoke a lot to the sentiment that many Swifties carried from the moment that their breakup with Joe was confirmed. They developed the belief that Joe had put Taylor in the basement during their relationship and that she had always craved the spotlight and he had deprived her of that. And I know we said this on the show at the time, but as much as we love Taylor Swift and as much as we're fans of her, the way people came for Joe will always be a sore spot for me. Like, I just find it really gross. And I find the way that we spoke about him to be so predictable and sad. Like, when they were together, everyone spoke about him as if he was a god. And then the second they break up, we speak about him as if he was this evil man who put Taylor in the basement. It's just very juvenile and stupid.
It's so stupid. It's also the way that Joel Alwyn approaches his fame, I think, is one of the most grounded things you see in a celebrity, which is, I cannot let this affect me in the way that other people can. Mm. That's how I would want to approach my fame. I reckon that's how 95% of people would want to approach their fame if they were as famous as Joe Alwyn. Like, it's the thing that's going to protect you and protect your mental health and help you survive in the industry. I find it so odd that people wanted to shame him for that.
It's also his complete right. It's his right to live that way. And if they're not right together, then what a good thing that they broke up.
Like, yeah, it's just so strange to me.
Imagine if someone cheated on Taylor. Imagine the level of outcry if something like that, like something actually really bad happened now. Like, I people know. Used to get mad 10 years ago. Imagine the outcry now, given what we saw happen to Joe Alwyn. Back to Maddie Healy, though. Many fans were upset by the news of Taylor's new relationship. They were critical of Maddie's involvement in the racist discussion on the Adam Friedland show and felt hurt that Taylor would associate herself with someone like that. A group of fans were so aggrieved, they began cancelling their orders from Taylor Swift's online store and tagging both her and her publicist Tree Payne in an attempt to get their attention. Ahead of the re-release of Speak Now, which Taylor announced kind of in the midst of all of these headlines, most of the cancelled orders for Speak Now TV were vinyls, and it was just becoming a big social media thing.
Yeah, 100%. Now, the theme of Speak Now continued with this group when they penned an open letter to Taylor alongside the hashtag SpeakUpNow. The letter read in part, "As concerned fans, we're writing to express our disappointment regarding recent events. Maddie Healy has been involved in acts and controversies that deeply trouble us." The letter described the offensive acts that Maddie had been a part of and continued, "While individuals have the right to make their own choices and form relationships, we believe it's essential for those in the public eye to take a stand against discrimination and hold themselves and their associates accountable. Your voice holds tremendous power, and right now your silence is palpable. This silence sends a message of indifference, particularly to the fans who have supported you."
How do you feel about this, given all the time that's passed?
I mean, I hated it at the time and I hate it now. Yeah. I agree. I hated the interview that Maddie Healy did on the Adam Friedland show, but I find it so bizarre for fans to feel so much ownership over their pop star's relationship that they would write her an open letter.
Yeah, I feel the same as I did when we spoke about it on Shameless. Taylor didn't acknowledge that letter. At least she didn't acknowledge it directly. On May 20, during an Eras Tour performance, she did tell the crowd this: "I've just never been this happy in my life, in all aspects of my life, ever before. And I just want to thank you for being a part of that. It's not just the tour. I just sort of feel like my life finally feels like it makes sense." I didn't love this. This is chaotic cringe for me.
I didn't love it at the time, but I understand it. When you've got people writing open letters to you telling you how to live your life, you have to just tell them to shut up. But it did feel...
it felt like a slap in the face to Joe.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Now, just 4 days later, she announced the music video and remix of her song Karma, featuring none other than Ice Spice. Holy shit, so much happened. And the thing is, some of our listeners, a small percentage, but some of them were like, around this time, stop talking about Taylor. It's like, how can we stop?
What do you expect us to do, genuinely?
I look back at this and it's like, this was hilarious.
We probably should have spoken about it more.
It's crazy. On Instagram, she said, "I'm a massive fan of this brilliant artist after getting to know her, and I can confirm she's the one to watch." It was definitely a PR move.
Yeah, we have no proof. But I agree with you now, looking back. It does feel like a PR move to prove to Taylor's fans that, see, everything was cool between her and Ice Spice in particular, and therefore the extension to Maddie Healy wasn't as damaging. Shortly after the release of the Karma remix, Ice Spice joined Taylor on stage at the Eras Tour in New Jersey. Matty was not there for either of the performances they did together. Perhaps because almost as quickly as they got together, Taylor and Maddie broke up. On June 5, TMZ ran this exclusive headline: "Taylor Swift, it's over with Maddie Healy."
Yeah, the article gave no reason behind the split. I mean, we got no reason for anything throughout the whole time, so I don't know why we would. That all happened in the space of...
a month?
About a month.
Yeah.
About a month.
A source told People she had fun with him. It was always casual. They are no longer romantically involved. Let's fast forward a few weeks.
It was a month and 2 days.
Good maths. Good month maths. My God. We're fast forwarding a little to June 24. It was just a couple of weeks ahead of the release of Speak Now, Taylor's version. And Zara, when Taylor was kind of gearing up for Speak Now to be re-released, she had a message for her fans.
She did. So during a performance in Minneapolis, before playing the Speak Now track, Dear John, she took a moment to ask her fans not to defend her on the internet. Now, after pointing out how nice it is that friends were trading friendship bracelets at the Eras Tour, she said, "I was hoping to ask you that as we lead up to this album, I would love for that kindness and that gentleness to extend onto our internet activities, right? So what I'm trying to say is I'm putting this album out because I want my own music, and I believe that those who have the desire to have their own music should be able to. That's why I'm putting out this album. I'm 33 years old. I don't care about anything that happened to me when I was 19 except the songs I wrote. So what I'm trying to tell you is that I'm not putting out this album so you should feel the need to defend me on the internet against someone you think I wrote a song about 14 million years ago."
This was definitely about John Mayer.
No doubt about it. I mean, she said it, as I said before, "Dear John." And I think it was because after she re-released Red, the person we spoke about the most, I think, was Jake Gyllenhaal.
I feel kind of, yeah. Do I feel bad about that? I have mixed feelings about it.
I have mixed feelings about it too.
But this worked. No one really spoke about John Mayer.
No. People still don't talk about John Mayer.
No. This really, really worked. People really listened to her. On July 7th, Speak Now, Taylor's version dropped. But unlike the previous Taylor's version re-recordings, this re-release had a pretty major lyric change. In the original version of Speak Now, the track Better Than Revenge was widely seen to be a slut-shamey song. It had this lyric: "She's not a saint and she's not what you think. She's an actress. She's better known for the things that she does on the mattress." Taylor would have seen, surely, all of this commentary, Zara, and for the re-release, she decided to make a change.
Yes, she changed it to, "She's not a saint and she's not what you think. She's an actress. He was a moth to the flame. She was holding the matches." You hated this because it didn't rhyme very well.
I did.
So I'm going to throw you under.
I just think sometimes I will opt for a better rhyme that's slightly slut-shamey than a shitty rhyme that is
pro-politically
women. Correct. Yeah.
So good. I mean, Taylor didn't acknowledge this lyric change upon release, but as we kind of quoted in our earlier episodes, she had spoken to The Guardian in 2014 about her kind of having slight regret about writing that, but that she was also 18.
Mm.
At the time Speak Now re-release came out, I didn't want her to change this lyric. Not because I didn't think it wasn't slut-shaming, but I think the beauty of re-releasing stuff is keeping it in its original form,
mm-hmm,
and using it as a conversation point to say we all do and say things that we don't agree with 10 years on.
Especially at 18.
And to live in a world where we're expected to kind of constantly change those things and keep them up to date. I don't know. I didn't love it, but then I think I'm feeling less passionate as time goes on, but I still think I sit in that camp.
I agree. I think she should have kept it as is. I mean, I'm the person who at 18 wrote an essay for university that we don't need feminism anymore.
Genuinely.
So like if we all had to, the expectation that the stuff we created decades ago needs to live up to today's standard is just a ridiculous expectation to me.
I think it could have been an interesting conversation, but that said, I understand why she couldn't be bothered being the one to have it.
I don't feel super passionately about it. I will still listen to the old version of Better Than Revenge. I'm so sorry, Taylor.
Oh yeah, is that the one you'll still listen
to? I think this is the one that I'll let my morals just sneak out the door for a sec.
Fair call. Regardless of any revised lyrics, Speak Now, Taylor's version was, as predicted, a monumental success. Upon release, it hit the highest single day streaming numbers on Spotify ever. She's just constantly breaking records. The same day that Speak Now, Taylor's version dropped, Taylor sent a pretty clear message about her relationship status at the time.
Yeah, over on her Instagram, she posted a carousel of photos from her Independence Day holiday party at her mansion. This is a yearly thing that she does. In those photos, she was seen with the Haim sisters and Selena Gomez having what looked to be a really fun time. She captioned the post this: "Happy belated Independence Day from your local neighborhood independent girlies. See you tonight, Kansas City." A little bit to unpack here, Zara, but I think this was definitely a post that communicated, I am single.
And I'm with my gals.
Who are also single.
Yes, 1,000%. Now, it's interesting timing because she wanted to put out to the world that she was probably just focusing on her friends and her music. But just one day after this, Taylor's path would intersect with someone who was about to become very important to her story.
I feel giddy about this. Probably the same moment she hit post on that carousel, NFL player Travis Kelce was threading together a bunch of friendship bracelets to bring to Taylor's ears to a performance on July 8 in Kansas City. And Zara, that would mark the beginning of what would turn out to be one of Taylor's most publicized, interesting, exciting romantic relationships yet.
Yeah, we're going to cover that on next week's episode of Scandal. Though if you want it right now, you can have it right now. Subscribe to Shade More on Apple and Spotify. That is where we release monthly bonus episodes. You get all our episodes early and ad-free. And with Scandal, you get them all in one go so you don't have to wait a whole week. If you're also going to a Melbourne concert on the weekend for Taylor Swift, I mean, you want to listen to part 5 before you go.
Of course you do.
You don't want to listen to it after the concert. So subscribe to Shade More. A massive thank you, as always, to our pop culture journalist, Eilish Gilligan.
A legend.
For putting this one together. A big thank you as well to our audio producer, Annabelle Lee. And thanks to Michelle Andrews, my co-host.
Oh, Zara, thank you. I love everything we do. This episode was an absolute banger and I really enjoyed it. I cannot wait to do part 5. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Shameless Media.
This podcast was recorded on Wurundjeri land. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Oh, hi, it's Annabelle Lee and Louis Hansen here. We are your hosts of Everybody Has a Secret.
Woo!
Woo! We are here essentially just to let you know that we drop episodes every week now. Every damn Friday morning, we are in your ears.
That is so exciting. What a time to be in your ear holes. So essentially, each episode, we unpack the real life secrets of our listeners. So this is for everyone who loves, you know, just a little bit of gossip in their lives, which, let's be real, Annabelle, is all of us.
It's absolutely all of us. Don't lie. You all love gossip. So if you want to listen to our show, please do head to your favourite podcast app and listen now.
See you there.
Bye.